This is Publishing Talks, a podcast about books, publishing, and authors sometimes. I'm David Wilk, your host. Today, I'm talking to Jordan Fleming from Owlcrate, which is a really good question how to describe you, but a subscription service for books in a really interesting way. How are you, Jordan?
I'm doing well. Yes. So it's a subscription book service started by Owlcrate's founder, actually. Karina Eady was actually the very first person to ever put a book in a shoebox and send it to people around the world. So the entire concept of Owlcrate was built on the idea that every single month, folks would get a YA book with goodies box. Completely blind, they would never know what they were getting each month. And it would be done to a theme, so sometimes dark academia, sometimes love and romance, you know, romantic-y sort of stuff. Each month would have a different theme and a different surprise book would come to people's doors. And I think that we've ran with the YA book and goodies box for a good 6 or 7 years. And we were the first book subscription box, but of course now there are so many. Illumicrate and Fairyloot over in the UK, as well as LitJoy in the US.
Yeah, no, I think when I found out about you, I think it was in an article about the emergence of the gift box, subscription box. It's hard to figure out how to really describe it in some ways.
Oh my goodness. Was it the article in The Guardian?
It could have been. I don't know. I don't remember now. And there are other businesses where they do these kind of gift box ideas, you know, that have emerged over the last 8 or 10 years. But for books, you know, I think I've been on your website, which is really interesting. And I see that you have expanded the vision. It's not just YA anymore. There also is some adult, and there's both monthly and quarterly. And then there also, you can just buy these special books. And when I looked at the box set, let me ask you, is it still a blind thing where you don't know what you're going to get? Or it appears now that you list all of the things that are in the box, but is that before or after?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So the subscription models, the boxes that you get shipped to your door as part of a subscription, those are still going to be completely a surprise each and every single month. There are a lot of different places online where you can go to get hints. We give emoji hints, for instance, on our Instagram. Sometimes we will leak little bits and surprises, and people can then guess as to which book they're going to receive in their subscription box. But then also, in the last 2.5 years, I'd say, Owlcrate's been focusing a lot on releasing special editions, I feel, of books that readers have wanted us to curate for a long time.
I notice, yes, you're doing special editions of previously published books with special covers on it, which reminds me of the first company I knew of doing that and still is around, Cemetery Dance, which does science fiction and fantasy. And they had started out doing these limited editions, sometimes signed by the author with special covers, hard covers, where the book might have been published in paperback or might have been published in hardcover originally, but these are all collectibles. And of course, way back, there's the Easton Press doing bespoke editions of classics in recent books. So there's a tradition of that, but it seems to work really well in the genres that you publish in when you do these editions. So those are, I assume, licensed. You have to go to the original publisher, get a license to do that and make a deal?
Yeah, I don't think any subscription box has ever spoken to that process. So I'm going to let you in on a little behind the scenes, if I would. Owlcrate actually receives manuscripts from Big Five publishers several times a year. And those manuscripts are typically that they are not advanced reading copies. They are in progress manuscripts for many authors. Many times we actually choose a book for our subscription model based off of maybe 10 pages of a book from an author who we know that we are going to enjoy. Because we work so far out, we actually do have special sales. I know that you can edit this. They have special sales offices within each of the Big Five publishers that specifically focus on selling certain books from all sorts of lists to the subscription boxes. So they provide us some options based on some author and genre, subgenres, and theming that we know that our readers enjoy. And then from there, we'll choose from a selection. And we work with all big five publishers.
So do you work with smaller publishers as well?
That's the question. Not currently for our subscription boxes, only because we require so many to be printed in a single run.
Right. So you are essentially partnering with the publisher early on, and they can dial it into their print run to know. I mean, are you able to reveal how many copies, or is that proprietary?
It's proprietary. I'm sorry.
I can
confirm that it's just thousands and thousands of books a year.
Yeah. And it, so that, and I've noticed that you have many different special treats for your customers. Not only signed editions, but alternate jackets. And now, are all of those specialized items produced by the publisher or under your direction, or do you produce them and then add them to the book?
That's a fantastic question. So once we want and wish to do a particular book, we let the publisher know, and the publisher then sends us the specifications as to how they're going to be printing their book, or just the size and dimensions that it is that we need to know. And then from there, our curation team actually approaches teams of artists. And they come up with beautiful curated pitch decks for our internal team for us to then review. We sign off on them. And then the most important part is that there aren't any special editions made at Owlcrate where the author has not signed off on all of the work. So it goes through a pretty strict approval process.
Right. So you're producing the alternate jacket.
All of the art. Yeah.
So do you then have to, I mean, I'm getting into the weeds of logistics, but I'm interested in that stuff. Books are shipped to you from the printer to your own facility?
That's correct. We're our own distribution center.
Right. And you have to put the jackets on the books?
They come all already done. Then we shrink wrap them in plastic and put them in our boxes, sometimes together with like little goodies or extras that go into each box.
Right. Like keychains or things like that?
Oh my goodness. No. Full tea kettles, coffee pour overs. We do stuffed animals. We do leather like books, pens, mugs. Actually, Owlcrate is known for having the best items in the business. And we do. I will wear that hat very proudly.
So how do you decide which book, let's say you're looking at a book, you like the author, it's a fantasy novel. How do you decide? I mean, this sort of harks back to, you know, years ago when this goes back to marketing inside the book trade. So we used to do special treats for booksellers to entice them to look at a book. You know, if you send somebody a book with a coffee mug, there's a better chance that the bookseller will look at the book and maybe decide to order copies of it. Now, this is all part of the PR and marketing inside the trade. I think that probably doesn't happen very much anymore. But it was always a big deal trying to figure out, like, what cool thing can we make for this book? And not be boring, you know, not replicate stuff that people have already had, because there's just so many coffee mugs you can do. And so how do you decide? Well, like, what's the process that goes into, like, well, this book should have a, I don't know what. How do you do that?
First and foremost, because Owlcrate is a team of creatives, it starts with dreaming. And the way that we choose our books is, honestly, I like to say this as a joke, but it's true. It's based on vibe. The benefit to our team is that our curation team and our marketing team, community, we're not just Team Owlcrate members. Most of us have come from the community. I built my own book club, Words and Whimsy. And our head of social media, for instance, Sophie, has her own bookish business, Readers Society Shop. All of us have these collective what we call bookish backgrounds with deep knowledge of the industry. And what we bring to Owlcrate is what we like. We are tastemakers, influencers before we ever stepped into the doors of Owlcrate. And more than that, we also have an incredible community that kind of helps guide and shape what it is that we're reading together alongside them. And we trust our taste. We've not often got it wrong.
I think that's good. I mean, I think that goes to some of the problems that people have in book marketing because they're mechanical. They love books. I don't, you know, don't get me wrong. You know, there's nobody in the book business that doesn't love books. But oftentimes, publishers are dealing with products and they have lots of products. And you can't be a reader and love and understand the communities for every book. For most publishers, that's really hard. But for you, obviously, this is, you know, there's that special connection that you have with your audience.
Well, because we don't have customers. And I think that's the biggest difference between who the sub boxes are and who the bookish businesses are and what this community is. Because we don't have customers, we have a community. And for 8 years, 10 years now, they've trusted us to show up. And we've cultivated a reader base that is not just about buying books. They're engaged, they're loyal, they're vocal, and we have to listen to them. That sort of relationship too, like when it's organic like that, readers coming together, you know, that's not transactional. You know, it's earned. And it's an earned trust that I think that we have that a big five, I think, just doesn't, because so many intermediaries.
Right. No, I think that is very special. And when I was looking at your website and thinking about the kinds of books, you know, you could only do this within a certain range. It's not defined by the type of book so much. I'm not saying you couldn't do this for, let's say, tractor books if you were really interested. You know, and I actually know a guy who is a tractor book publisher, and he has a community. And that, I think, is really crucial, that he loves tractors. He lives and breathes tractors. And so I think that really you have to be, that is the necessary thing. You have to be part of the community yourself.
That's exactly right. And going back to the Guardian article, I think the thing that frustrated me the most about the piece is that the author themselves speculated as to whether or not readers could trust subscription boxes as we move into publishing. How can readers trust a subscription box to choose the books? And like Clapack answer is, babe, we already do.
Well, actually, I would look at it the other way around. I think that you're probably in a better position to publish. I think that ought to scare some of the publishers that you work with. I'm sure there's a tension there that you probably are better positioned to publish books than anybody else is in your categories.
Yes, because we are the only models within this industry that have a direct pipeline to thousands of committed readers, and they know it, and I know it. Our model, you know, we have no retailers, there's no third-party noise. It's just us and our readers making the decisions. But the, you know, these are passionate readers every month, opting in month after month. You know, it's not scale, it's just certainty. And I think that when traditional marketing can't guarantee ROI, they come to us.
So it's impossible not to point out that you're based in Canada.
That's true.
Mostly Canadians working there. I noticed you have a couple of Minnesotans, but you're mostly Canadian. And suddenly that has become an issue where it was never before and should not be an issue ever. But how, I have to ask, because it's what's going on, how does, you know, what does that do to your business? I assume most of your customers are in the United States. Now you're going to be, you're bringing American books to Canada to box and ship back to America. How does that work with the tariffs?
You know what? It doesn't. And one thing that we are committed to is doing our best not to pass off that cost to our readers and to our amazing manufacturing team in China. Just a shout out to our incredible team that does all of our work over there. They made a commitment to our readers themselves that they would not pass off the cost to either us or our readers. I think that as we move forward, we're moving forward with more confidence than we were a couple of months ago. I think that there's a lot of fear in the water right now. And I think that that sort of fear and chaos is what people want. Fear and chaos cause people to panic. I will say that Owl Crate is not panicked. We've seen crisis after crisis, and we got through COVID just fine. Looking to the future, we know that some of these costs are going to be things that we incur on ourselves. And we're going to do our best not to pass it off to people. Where we have to, we're going to make a commitment to be very, very clear about why.
Yep. Well, I think transparency is crucial.
Yeah. We've always operated transparently. I don't think that's going to change. I will say, though, that we are looking at other markets, and I think that there are a lot of incredible emerging markets, specifically where Owl Crit Press would have just great opportunity to serve need.
Right. You mean when you say other markets, you mean outside of the United States.
That's right.
So in terms of publishing, what is your kind of outlook and plan?
I don't have one. I think that when folks have been interviewing me, I think they've expected me to have a 5 or 10 year plan, but it was just 2.5 years ago that I went to my CEO and I said, yo, I'm going to start a publishing house. This wasn't the question. I just said, I think this is what I'm going to do as a fun side project. And my CEO career went bet. And 2 weeks later, I had an editor and several authors who were pretty well known on board. And I had to go back and be like, okay, so I accidentally made a thing. And then when we released in LA, when we launched Owl Crit Press at Y'all West in 2024, I was like, we had no business doing so. I think that we were all just very, very excited. But we passed our anthologies at that time. We had no definitive plan. And I will say that I've been taking a lot of meetings and discussing a lot of things internally. Owl Crit Press will be a thing. Where that goes, we're not entirely sure yet. But I will say that we are looking more and more to our community to guide us. Our success with our anthologies is proven at this point. We will be releasing our full lineup for Future States of Stars, which is my second anthology, at Owl Criticon in August for anybody who's listening early. And I think that it's going to be clear there what our intentions are moving forward. We have a lot of relationships to lean on. Authors trust us, readers trust us, and I think that there's a lot of room for growth.
So you mentioned something that I don't think I knew about. You have a con of your own?
I do, yes. Yeah. I have a virtual conference hosted by the amazing Owl Crit community and the Words and Whimsy Book Club. Every August, it's a completely free virtual convention headlined by authors like John Scalzi, Jay Kristoff, Christopher Paolini. And this year, I can confidently say that you're going to see some repeat guests because I'm going to be working on a few fun editions for 2026.
Wow. So how is it? What's the technology that goes into having, do you have thousands of people?
Yes. So I think that altogether, the most folks that we had on one stream was 8,000.
Wow. So what is the technology like for doing that?
Honestly, we use a combination of StreamYard, and we actually have our very own app called Owl Crit's The Nest platform with 26,000 users. It's available now on the Google and Apple Play stores. It can host up to 2,000 people per stream now. And with StreamYard, I think it's 10,000. I'm not sure what our cap is. Yeah.
That's pretty cool. That is really
cool. It's pretty cool. It's very strange to be sitting here and speaking with you because just a few years ago, all I did was run a book club. So now I am here.
So was the book club that you ran, that was your prior to doing this? It's not part of Alfred.
Yeah.
That was your own.
So I started the Words and Whimsy Book Club in 2017 on Facebook. In 2019, my first author guest for a live chat was Kendara Blake. And from there, I think we've hosted almost 600 lives since 2017.
That's pretty great. Yeah. So you're still doing it?
Not very often. Unfortunately, I retired from community back in December. I couldn't do that many lives anymore. I'm getting older. But I do have a reboot as well of the Owl Crit podcast. We were speaking about that I do podcast work prior to the interview. And the very first episode is going to be me talking to Tamora Pierce.
It will
launch next week. And it's all about, do you know how sassy she is? What a wonderful woman.
I've never had contact with her. I just know her name.
It's Tamora Pierce tells it all. So she talks about fantasy legacy and her 45-year career.
Wow. That is pretty cool.
She's very, very cool. I'm excited to do that. So I do some but more podcast style these days.
Is Tamora Pierce one of the authors of Owlcrate?
We're going to be doing special editions of hers next year. We're one of the only folks who are able to touch her IP. She's just an absolutely wonderful woman.
So, you know, obviously there's some questions I would love to ask, which I'm sure you can't answer, that are, you know, about your business, you know, the proprietary part of your business. But, and we've sort of touched on what I think is really an interesting and important part of what you do, which is that you're a community, that it's not, you know, I think there's this sort of desire on the part of publishers to find ways of selling books, and they'll kind of, you know, think of, well, this works, maybe we could do, maybe there's, you know, it'll work for you, but we can try it for something else. But I think that I don't know whether it works that way. I think it's really difficult to establish communities. They don't just happen. And, you know, people have to work hard for a community to exist.
Yes. I don't think that folks even understand sometimes the work that goes into building a free community. So with the 26,000 members on Owlcrate's Nest app, there are over 30 moderators, and I would say an equal number of what we call super users or helpers that are within that space constantly helping other people. And these are volunteers, like members of my personal book club, moderators of a decade, who put in 20 to 30 hours of free time every single week. The amount of lift that our community does for us because they want to, because they're here for us, is absolutely incredible. And that's not something that you can easily replicate. You know, when you start with community, it's a bunch of friends, you know. It's the classic C.S. Lewis. What, you too? I thought I was the only one.
Yeah, right.
And you have to start with that curiosity first. And then you have to actually build what is essentially a tiny company. And you're building a company, you know, in the exact same way that you would be building an actual company, except that you're serving no one except for the community.
Right.
Which, by the way, is how business should work too.
Well, yes. Yeah, but maybe how politics should work too, but that's
I think community is how everything should work.
Yeah. And it should be human scale. And of course, technology does allow us to redefine what human scale is, because you couldn't do this if it was all taking place in a small town somewhere. You wouldn't have enough people. But that would be although maybe around certain libraries and, you know, maybe some communities could actually replicate it. But having the technology really makes a big difference.
It makes a huge difference. This isn't something that would be nearly, you know, scalable without it.
Yeah. Think about how it would have been in the days of mail and catalogs. Actually,
I can talk to this. A fascinating deep dive. Last year, I went with my best friend Tara to the Boston Public Library, but specifically into the old BPL.
Uh-huh.
It was in March of 2024, and it was this lovely 100-year-old time capsule into what Boston was like for the community around the library at that time. And the women in the early 1900s, I remember this specifically, used to have these little like book clubs, but they were like the sassy sort of book clubs that we have today. And how it would get around is that they would actually put out notices. So it was almost like very Bridgerton-esque. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were these gossip pages, and then they would make it into like these gossip rags, and then everybody else would show up at Sandra's house at 4 p.m. on a Tuesday. I think that we've always found a way to make it work. We've always found a way to like almost force community.
I wonder, it's women who do it, you know?
Primarily, or I'm non-binary, but like AFAB people for sure. Yeah. And the queer community as well. It's not white dudes, David. I'm sorry.
Right. I get it. Don't worry. I understand. And I think that, you know, historically, I think, and I know this is a vast generalization, but if you look at culture, it's mostly been women making culture. I mean, there are a lot of men who do things that are cultural, but women are the people who weave the fabric together. And, you know, in those earlier times, it was done manually. Now it can be done digitally. So if somebody came to you and said, I want to do something like this myself in the category that I'm interested in, would you encourage them or would you tell them this is too hard, you shouldn't even try?
I would encourage them. Part of the resources that I'm going to have available on the new Nest app, they're going to be courses. They're going to be courses for how to host your own book club, how to build your own online book club, how to approach authors and industry experts for live chats. I can build all of that out. I have all of those resources and I don't believe in gatekeeping.
I think that's really good. I think it is something that I think is valuable to share. And because it is people creating community because they care, that kind of is part of the game. That's part of the deal, you know, to share that and help other people, foster other people to share their own enthusiasm, whatever it might be.
You can't be so precious with community. It's not yours. And I think that the best community leaders understand that you're there as a steward and you're not there for any other purpose. You know, the best sort of leadership removes the ego entirely. If it's there, it's there for the wrong reasons and you got to step outside yourself.
That's still hard for a lot of people to do.
It is the most difficult, powerful lesson I've ever had to learn. And it also took a lot of vulnerability, which is scary as well.
Yeah, it is. And not everyone's suited to it. No. Communalism is not, it's not just something you can try out. You know, it's something you have to work on.
It becomes an ethos.
Yeah.
And it's the ethos that I founded Press with, and it's the ethos that we will use forever moving forward. Like our values are not a marketing slogan.
Well, mission and values are really what are most important. And many people start enterprises with missions and values and then forget them along the way. And I think if you can keep to yours, you'll be fine.
Our first one is community, if you would believe it.
Yeah, I believe in that. I mean, I believe that you in that, because everything you've talked about demonstrates that that is your core value. I'm really glad we talked about this because it wasn't necessarily what I would have guessed would be the discussion. And what I would learn, but that's why I like to have these conversations. It's to learn. And I think what you're doing is really important. So
thank you.
I want to thank you for doing this, you know, for having the conversation, for sharing and talking about what this really means, because I think it's great. I'm actually surprised that I didn't know about it before. So I'm really glad to know about it now.
I'm glad you know about it.
Yeah. Well, maybe some other people, you know, will find out from listening to this podcast. You never know.
Fingers crossed. It'll only help more writers.
This has been Publishing Talks, a podcast about books and publishing. I'm David Wilk, your host. I've been talking to Jordan Fleming from Owlcrate. And I really recommend that if you're listening to this, go check them out right now, owlcrate.com.